the real races, you might be a cuckserve 10. If you think Mexicans are natural conservatives, you might be a cuckserve 10. If you think Israel should defend its own borders from brown invaders, but we shouldn't, you might be a cuckservative. You might be a cuckservative if you cry and moan about Planned Parenthood being founded by eugenicists. You might be a cuckservative if you think liberals destroyed Detroit. You fantasize that Martin Luther King Jr. would be a Republican today, you might be a conservative. If you unironically use the phrase toxic masculinity, you might be a conservative. If you think Donald Trump's immigration rhetoric is bad for the GOP's image, you might be a conservative. You might be a conservative if you praise America's Judeo-Christian values. You might be a cuckservative if Falling Down is not your absolute favorite movie of all time. If Bruce Jenner calling himself a woman is good enough for you, you might be a cuckservative. If you think Obamacare is American communism, but Medicare and Social Security are off limits, you might be a conservative. If you think the Hispanic vote is important to the future of the GOP, you might be a conservative. If you think it's inevitable that whites will become a minority in the United States, you might be a conservative. If being called a racist scares you more than the death of this country, you might be a conservative. And finally, you might be a conservative if you think any woman other than Ann Coulter should not be a home cook.
This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Matt Forney, and we're going to be discussing his article on cuckservatives. Matt, great having you back on.
Thanks for inviting me back on, Robert.
So this cuckservative meme is really gotten a lot of mainstream attention now. There's been articles written about it in major newspapers. I think it's the Washington Post, all the mainstream conservative news outlets. And you wrote an article, 10 Signs You Might Be a Cuckservative. First of all, do you know the origins of the term? Did someone originally coin it, or did it just sort of come about online?
No one really knows who exactly coined it, but the term was popularized by the forum My Posting Career, as well as the website The Right Stuff. But I'd say who was responsible for popularizing it. There's a Twitter user called the Cuckservative who was clearly responsible for popularizing it. So that's where the term sort of came from.
And the first initial reaction from a mainstream conservative site was the site called Red State. And his reaction, Eric Erickson on Red State, and your article talks about his reaction, and he gets, like, really offended by it. He doesn't just kind of blow it off, because I think it hits him personally. Because if you look at kind of insults, like, first of all, there was a thing where they were calling the Tea Party they're calling them teabaggers, and that's just kind of silly. The conservative thing really hits them personally.
Yeah, I'd say that's the reason why the that's pretty much acknowledged that's the reason why the conservative suddenly became so popular, because it basically reminds movement conservatives of how impotent they are. Basically, the whole origin of the insult, you know, emerging cuckold and conservative, is basically saying that conservatives, despite their claiming to stand for traditional values, for America as it is, have rolled over and basically let the left screw this country over. And the conservative insult reminds them basically that they've completely failed at every single one of their objectives. This country keeps moving further and further left. The left keeps seizing more and more power. And by calling conservatives cuckservatives, we're reminding them basically that they completely failed at it, and we're implying that they almost sort of enjoy watching their nation, their thing, their love get soiled by another person, in this case, the left.
So this conservative meme is something that originated in the alternative right, and originally the alternative right was something that was seen as very kind of fringe and marginalized, but this shows you that it's actually making an impact on mainstream politics and affecting mainstream conservatives, and also Breitbart wrote a response to it. What's your take on that whole thing, and would you describe Breitbart as a site that sort of, I would describe them as sort of an in-between both sides. They're not like full-on conservatives. They're like partially conservatives, kind of.
I'd characterize Breitbart as a site that's sort of warming up to the alternative right in the mainstream, because they see it as a potential growth market. Whereas most mainstream conservatives have either ignored or outright attacked the alternative right and the manosphere. As you see with the conservative meme, the right bar is not like ideologically aligned with the alternative right, but it's willing to consider their ideas and willing to actually, you know, engage them on an equal footing. Milo Yiannopoulos, who authored the Breitbart conservative piece, admits that he himself is kind of a conservative by my definition. But
he actually joked he's literally taken it in the ass by a black dick.
Well, yeah, he is openly gay. But the thing is, he's willing to engage the alternative right in the manosphere. Like he rose to fame because he was the only conservative journalist who took notice of Gamergate last year and was covering it in a fair and balanced manner. And he basically says to other conservatives, you know, your failure to notice Gamergate, your failure to notice the alternative right, your failure to notice the manosphere and notice their concerns and the ideas that they're presenting is why conservatism is failing as an entity, because it's failing to change with the times. It's failing to account for the fact that there's a large swath of young men and women that for whom the likes of Rush Limbaugh or National Review have had no relevance whatsoever. They're engaged in Gamergate, they're engaged in the manosphere, they're engaged in the alternative right. Breitbart is the only organization that's reaching out to them. Breitbart, and to a lesser extent, InfoWars.
What do you think about, he also wrote that article a while back called The Sexodus, which is basically pretty much completely putting out the information that the alternative right has.
Yeah, basically, Yiannopoulos is one of the few mainstream conservatives who's willing to engage with the alternative right in the manosphere without dismissing them or getting upset and calling them as racist or white supremacist or misogynist or whatever, which again proves basically the point that the people using the conservative epithet have made. The conservatives who claim to be fighting for traditional values, for traditional America, roll over for the left every time because they're afraid of being called racist or sexist or homophobic, or it will soon be transphobic, as the Overton window keeps getting shifted further and further to the left. And the fact that Yiannopoulos and Breitbart are the only, I wager they'll be one of the major conservative sites, if they aren't already the biggest site sometime in the next 5 years, because they're the only group that is so far willing to engage with the alternative right in the manosphere and take advantage of this group of young men who don't really adhere to the mainline conservatism of Red State or National Review or whatever.
I've noticed the same with immigration issue is they've actually written articles not just criticizing illegal immigration, but they've also written articles criticizing legal immigration, and that used to be a major taboo within conservatives. The one issue that they're pretty much, when it comes to anything to do with, like, foreign policy, like going to war with Iran, on that issue, they're pretty much totally in line with mainstream conservatives. But as I said, they're kind of, I would describe them as a sort of intermediate between the mainstream right and the alternative right. Would you say that's a pretty accurate description?
Oh, yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate. And, well, you know, you got to start somewhere. You don't expect every... Yeah, it would be unrealistic to expect Breitbart to suddenly go full alternative right. But what they're doing now is pretty much... I personally never thought that any conservative publication would take notice of this part of the Internet. So I'm just impressed with what they're doing so far.
So your number one point in this article you wrote, 10 Signs You Might Be a Cuckservative, is you care more about Israel's borders than America's borders. And you have a picture of John McCain and, well, Joe Lieberman, at least, well, he's, I don't know if he doesn't call himself a conservative, but he's closely aligned with John McCain. But you have a picture of John McCain at the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem, and he's obviously one of the major open border supporters. You just talk about the blatant hypocrisy that they care more about a foreign country's borders, but they won't protect our borders. I think it does kind of tie in with the whole cuckold theme, because the major politicians like John McCain, they're bought off by special interests, but I do think among mainstream conservatives, because they don't feel they're not allowed to be nationalistic in a European sense, they live kind of vicariously through Israel.
Yeah, basically, Israel is the only country that it's considered acceptable for Israel to defend its national interests, to defend its borders, to protect against illegal immigration as well as incursions from its neighbors. Yet every other country, or more accurately, every European country or country of European extraction, such as the U.S., is required to invite the world in, you know, invite the world, invade the world, and hock to the world, as Steve Saylor would put it. We're expected to immediately bring in all these immigrants, legal and illegal. We're expected to accommodate all of these foreigners who have no connection to European or American culture, just invite them in whatsoever, and we're told basically we can't stop it. Like, America, the left keeps reminding us that America is the majority non-white in 2040 or 2050, whatever it is, and we have no choice but to give citizenship to the millions of illegal aliens already within America's borders. Yet, not only is Israel allowed to, concern for Israel's integrity as a Jewish nation, basically the third rail of American politics, you can't criticize Israel and expect to get elected to any position of consequence. Israel actually has managed to not only stop its illegal immigration problem with a border wall, something that the conservatives claim that America can't do, but they also managed to reverse their demographic issue. Just as recently as 10 years ago, demographers were predicting that Israel will be majority Arab by 2040 or 2050 because Jews were not having enough children. Well, the government, Israeli government, has incentivized Jews to have children to the point where their birth rate has more or less recovered, which, again, is something that conservatives and liberals think that America can't do. We have no choice but to become majority non-white by so-and-so date.
And it's a good thing. I mean, if you look at the politics over there, Yitzhak Rabin was considered the most liberal of the Israeli prime ministers. He was assassinated by a right-wing extremist, but even he said that Israel had to remain 80% Jewish.
Yeah, basically, Israel is, for better or for worse, a country that's constantly reminded of its own extinction because all of its neighbors are varying degrees of hostile. It has a hostile population in its midst, the Palestinians. I'm not making a value judgment one way or the other. I have no real opinion on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. But
so you're basically neutral on that conflict.
I believe the U.S. should stop supporting, giving unilateral support to Israel because I don't believe the U.S. should be involved in it. But otherwise, I really don't care who wins this conflict or whatever. As far as I'm concerned, it has no relevance to America at all. It's as relevant to every other tribal conflict in the world, which is zero relevance to the U.S.
So, but basically, every major prominent Republican, and including Donald Trump as well, and Donald Trump is someone who's not. I mean, he's some. We'll talk about him later in the show. Basically, all the major Republican congressional candidates are talking about getting tough with Iran. They're threatening war with Iran. Huckabee made that famous comment recently about how. What did Huckabee say, that Obama's deal with Iran is the equivalent of Israel being marched into the ovens?
Oh, yeah. Hyperbole like that. You know, us constantly, and that's the example of what I'm talking about. And one of the defining traits of conservatives, we constantly have to get involved in Israel's business. Realistically, to be perfectly honest, if Iran has a problem with Israel, The only nation that should concern is Israel. There's no reason for us to get involved anyway. In fact, from a real politic point of view, it would be far more expedient for the U.S. to just sell Israel down the river, because they have no valuable resources. They're not one of the oil producing countries in the Middle East. Our so-called alliance with them is completely one-sided and has provided the U.S. basically no benefit whatsoever. To put it in other terms, you know. The relationship between the U.S. and Israel is like the relationship between a beta orber and the hot girl he constantly sucks up to, but mysteriously she never sleeps with him. That's how Israel treats the U.S. And if we stop acting so pathetically groveling to Israel, you know, this country would be far better off.
And we really have no – we should stay out of the Middle East completely. I mean, both the Iraq war and Afghanistan war have been disasters. There's really no interest being involved in these wars. And any intervention in that region makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
I dissent ever so slightly on the Afghanistan war. That war was necessary for the simple objective of taking down Bin Laden and al-Qaeda. But it should have been over. That war should have been over in 6 months tops. We should have been able to get Bin Laden and shut down Al Qaeda in 6 months tops. The fact that we're still there, and the fact that we couldn't get Bin Laden until 10 years after 9/11, just shows basically the complete idiocy of our foreign policy, our policy in the Middle East, and just more or less America's growing impotence as a world power.
And the other point you make, point number two, is you think that opposing free trade is Nazism. And this is in response to Bernie Sanders is running in the Democratic Party. And I think what's ironic is that Bernie Sanders he's basically an outright socialist, an outright Marxist, but he's making a lot more sense than any of these mainstream conservatives. He's talking a lot about serious issues like manufacturing jobs going overseas. And he did an interesting interview with Ezra Klein. And Ezra Klein is sort of like this center-left neoliberal type. And Bernie Sanders was saying that the right wing, like the Koch brothers, wants open borders because they want to depress wages to the global standards. And then some mainstream conservative site, Kevin Williamson at National Review, he attacked Bernie Sanders and called Bernie Sanders a national socialist for advocating, for opposing free trade.
Yeah, he basically called Sanders a Nazi without actually saying it. And this is one of the most absurd sort of, you know, tics of the conservatives. They're constantly trying to out-left the left. I make points later in the article with, for example, the constant refrain that the Democrats are the real racists, or the Democrats are the real sexists. They're the ones who are really waging a war on women. The conservatives are constantly trying to out-left the left by trying to claim that the left are the real Nazis or the real racists or whatever. And mysteriously, it never works. And in the case of Williamson, free trade basically has just completely strip-mined the American economy. It's responsible primarily for the declining wages, the declining standard of living of the average American household. Yet we're expected to believe that defending the country's national interest, Sanders wanting to defend the country's economic interest against low-wage countries with lower standards of living, such as Mexico, is some form of Nazism. Additionally, Sanders, I think it was yesterday, Sanders mentioned in another interview that he is in favor of, well, he's not exactly in favor of immigration restriction, but he basically pointed out that bringing in immigrants depresses wages because it increases the supply of labor. So, but Sanders, in many ways, Sanders has a more conservative position on immigration than most of the GOP.
If you look at Bernie Sanders' record on that, and you compare him to, like, if you look at his record, it's interesting as he votes, on one hand, he voted for amnesty in the DREAM Act, but on the other hand, he voted against bringing in more foreign visas, like the H-1B program. But that's kind of interesting. Ironic part is that someone like Ted Cruz, who's the big Tea Party guy, his voting record is the opposite. He voted against amnesty, but he votes in favor of H-1B visas. So that's kind of interesting to see those contradictions. But Bernie Sanders is really saying a lot of what he has to say is really spot on about how bringing in about foreign workers and job outsourcing. And I mean, as I said, Bernie Sanders would be a vast improvement over any of these mainstream conservative politicians.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's probably where a lot of his appeal comes from. Actually, that was a lot of I went up to college, not in Vermont, but just over the border in New York, around the time that Sanders was elected to the Senate. He is kind of a popular folk hero up there because Vermont's not as left-wing as its reputation would make it seem. But Sanders is popular because he's not a career politician. He's like a regular guy, you know. Maybe not a regular guy, but he's a sincere, you know, true believer. He's not a triangulator like Hillary Clinton. That's why he's been so popular in Vermont, despite basically lacking pretty much every successful component you would think a politician would need, such as charisma. He's not very charismatic. He's an independent. He's not part of the Democratic or Republican parties. He relies mostly on individual donations for his political campaigns rather than donations from corporations. A lot of Sanders support maybe just from the fact that people may not agree with everything he's saying, but people would rather have a sincere socialist than an insincere someone like Hillary Clinton, who tries to claim that she's closer to the center.
Yeah, I mean, the whole debate over economics is between the phony sort of establishment right and establishment left. Is about issues how high taxes should be versus how much social programs we should have, but they're not talking about the major issues, which are jobs being destroyed through outsourcing.
Yeah, pretty much. No one is really addressing these issues, and that's why you see candidates like Sanders and to a greater extent Donald Trump sucking up a lot of the support. In many ways, it's similar to how Ross Perot was popular in the 1992 and 1996 presidential campaigns. He was addressing issues that both major party candidates were ignoring: immigration and the economy.
So your third point is you believe that the Democrats. Third point of a conservative is you believe that Democrats are the real racist, and talk about Rand Paul coming up to Al Sharpton. And some examples of that is mainstream conservatives like to point out that Democrats were originally the party of slavery and segregation. They like to point out that Planned Parenthood was founded by Margaret Sanger, who was a white supremacist. Rand Paul proposed that Detroit will become successful if it's a free enterprise zone.
Yeah, basically, basically, Republicans keep trying to sort of cater to blacks with this sort of, again, as I mentioned earlier, keep trying to out-left the left, and it never works because blacks have continuously voted Democratic and percentages of 90% and more for the past 3 or so decades. All of their attempts to woo the black vote have completely failed. And the reason why Rand Paul was originally going to be one of the front runners for the presidential nomination, the main reason he's going to he's falling in the polls is precisely because he cuddled up to Al Sharpton, and he tried to pander to the black vote by claiming that in Ferguson, Michael Brown was killed unjustly. When the average GOP voter, the average white American, everyone with a brain can tell that there are cases of police brutality, many of them. But Michael Brown was not. Michael Brown was a legitimate thug, and I wouldn't say so far as to say he deserved to die, but he had it coming. When you assault a police officer and try to steal his gun, you're angling for a beatdown. So conservatives' constant attempts to pander to minorities and ignore the white base that turns out for them at every election, and is the only reason why they still have any power whatsoever. It's just another example of how they basically enjoy getting cuckolded.
And, the other point you make, point number four, is you think the reason Detroit and other major U.S. cities are falling apart is because of unions. And, I mean, you tie this in with the racial aspect, but another point I'll make is one of the reasons a lot of cities have been destroyed is because of manufacturing going overseas. And if you look at unions, the public and poor unions, like the prison guards and the teachers to a degree as well, are powerful. But private sector unions were pretty much decimated from starting with Nixon started the union busting, and then basically Reagan finished them off. And then after that is really when you saw all those manufacturing jobs come overseas. So, but basically, conservatives say that unions destroyed all these cities like Detroit.
Yeah, basically, they completely ignore the racial elements of it. The reason Detroit is falling apart is not because of unions, it's because it's 80% black. The reason why New Orleans is falling apart is because it's 60% black. There are other cities that with high levels of unionization that relied on unionized jobs like manufacturing and whatnot, such as Pittsburgh or Chicago to a lesser extent, or even whole states such as Vermont and Oregon. Those states are doing better than black areas with the same policies. So while socialistic policies may not hobble a country or a region in certain ways, they are not the ultimate deciding factor. The ultimate deciding factor is race. The reason why these the areas that are doing the worst in this country are areas that are majority black or, to a lesser extent, majority Latino.
And just look at countries like Germany or Scandinavia. They were this basically socialistic countries, and basically socialism did work at first until they started importing a lot of these immigrants into those countries.
Yeah, basically.
So I mean, socialism can work in some situations if you have the right culture and the right people and culture in that country.
Yeah, pretty much. And conservatives want to deny the effects of the effect of race and the effect of demographics and culture on a country's success, on a country nation's success or whatnot, like. I saw when conservative was first trending on Twitter, I saw one comment, I forget who it was, basically, you might be a conservative if you want America to return to the traditional values of the 1950s without acknowledging that America was 90% white then.
And another point about the 1950s is in the 1950s, the top income bracket paid a much higher rate in taxes. I think the top income bracket in the 1950s paid 90% of their income in taxes, and conservatives never admit that.
Yeah, the 50s were a lot more socialistic than we are now, in many ways. Well, I wouldn't necessarily say the tax rates were part of the reason why the 50s were such a prosperous time, but the fact that the top marginal tax rate back in the 50s was 90% and the country was still prosperous implies that tax rates didn't get in the way and therefore not the ultimate determinant of a nation's success, as conservatives would claim.
What is your take on, like, Reaganomics, the theory that if you cut taxes for the rich, that will spur economic growth?
If we look around, this basically it hasn't worked. And that's basically been the policy of the governments, both Democratic and Republican, going back to Reagan, obviously. And the country is poorer now than it was in the 80s. The average American is poorer. Purchasing power has declined. Standard of living has declined. Unemployment has climbed. Underemployment has climbed. It doesn't work.
And point number five is you believe that Hispanics are natural Republicans. And this is about you talked specifically about Jeb Bush and Karl Rove. And some of them have actually tried to say that immigration will make the country more conservative. They've even said that.
Yeah, and we've yet to see that materialize because, as I linked to in the article, the economist Tino Sandandaji did a longitudinal analysis of Latinos' political opinions. Latinos have left-wing views on just about everything. Even the issues that they're supposedly conservative on, like abortion, the majority of Latinos are pro-abortion. The majority of Latinos are pro-gay marriage. The majority of Latinos are left-wing on every issue. So importing more of them into the country is just going to make the country more left-wing. The conservative approach of bringing in these voters and trying to make them conservative hasn't worked. The closest, the largest percentage of the Latino vote that any Republican presidential candidate has ever gotten in the past 50 years was George W. Bush in 2004, and he basically did this by bribing Latinos with low-interest mortgages, the aftermath of which led to the housing crisis. And even then, it was 40%. Even with all that basically upending the economy to cater to Latinos, he couldn't even win a majority of the Latino vote. So catering to Latinos is completely pointless.
If you look at polling right now, Jeb Bush and Donald Trump are basically about the same as far as their popularity among Latino voters.
Yeah, Trump has much there was an article of this at the anonymous conservative blog. Trump is actually leading among blacks as well. What few blacks do vote Republican? Trump is breaking all the rules. He's basically showing conservatives that not only do you not have to grovel to these people to get their votes. In fact, groveling is the worst possible way to try and get their votes. If you're unapologetic about what you stand for, they will follow you.
Yeah, and as far as blacks go, pandering to blacks on racial grievances is idiotic. But as far as economic issues go, blacks are definitely harmed by manufacturing jobs going overseas. Blacks are harmed by illegal immigration.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think as the problems of illegal immigration become more evident, we could thank Trump for this. His attempt to shove the negative effects of illegal immigration first, frontmost in Americans' minds, will likely drive more legal minorities into the Republican Party as a complete afterthought, because people are going to realize basically bringing in all these people is an incredibly bad idea. Outsourcing jobs is an incredibly bad idea. It's done nothing but hurt us. Trump is good at making these sorts of emotional appeals that do far more good than all the intellectual arguments in the world, at least when it comes to seeking political office.
As far as Trump goes, do you think he's just an opportunist, or do you think he's genuine? I know some people have been talking about his record Like, I know he owned this resort in Florida, and he wanted more foreign visas for his resort. So, I mean, you can analyze Trump's record, and you can call it hypocrisy.
I think the idea whether Trump is an opportunist or a whether he's genuine is kind of irrelevant at this stage, because basically Trump's main value isn't so much that he's going to win the nomination. In fact, he probably will end up losing out, because it's very rare for a non-politician to be able to get a nomination, let alone get elected. But his main value is that he's pushing the nation as a whole and our political dialogue further to the right. He is reversing the untold damage that the conservatives and leftists have done to our national dialogue. We've noticed other candidates, such as Cruz, Ted Cruz specifically, being more vocal about their opposition to immigration, being more vocal about their conservative values. We've seen, for example, Bernie Sanders being more conservative on immigration. We've even seen Hillary move rightward on some issues. Like, for example, Hillary basically threw Planned Parenthood under the bus in the wake of their little body part selling scandal. Trump, regardless of whether or not he's an opportunist or he's genuine or whether he's really running or whether he's just being a troll, as some people claim, Trump is invaluable because he is helping push conservative. He's pushing the nation as a whole. He's making it more conservative. And he's making Americans more conservative just by what he's doing right now.
It's interesting, and also some of his different other ideas. I know he has proposed a tax on companies that outsource and an import a tariff on foreign goods. And so he's putting out a lot of good ideas, and whatever you think about Trump personally, I think those ideas will have an impact. I remember he was speculating running as an independent under Ross Perot's Reform Party in 2000, and he's running more. I think he's trying to appeal more to the right, but he kind of ran as more back then a radical centrist. And he even talked back then, he was talking about being like raising taxes on the ultra wealthy to pay off the deficit. He was talking about some kind of single payer health care.
Yeah, basically, Trump has realized basically that even he could finance a successful third party campaign, but it's not going to go anywhere. At most, he could possibly eke out a second place win. But if Trump wins, but Trump's main value is that he is going to. If he's serious about getting the nomination, he's going to force the GOP to bend to his whim. Because he can basically threaten to say, the GOP has established, the conservatives have tried to freeze out non-conservative candidates, like basically what they did to Ron Paul in 2012. They can't do it to Trump because Trump has the funding to mount a successful third-party campaign, which will in turn throw the election to the Democrats. So basically, Trump is going to either force his even if he doesn't get the nomination, he's going to find some way to become, for example, maybe the VP candidate or the whoever ends up winning the election is going to have to basically get his blessing. Because if not, he can mount his own third party campaign and just completely fuck things up for the Republicans.
And your sixth point is for conservatives is you support corporations despite their advocacy for leftist causes. Conservatives are opposed to any kind of government action that limits the power of corporations, any kind of regulations on minimum wage increases, any kind of environmental regulations, and then basically the corporations reward the conservatives by funding left-wing causes. We talked about the immigration issue earlier. Corporations have been funding feminist causes, a lot of the stuff involving homosexuality, transsexuality. Hollywood, you give Hollywood an example of promoting sexual degeneracy. So all the kind of stuff that social conservatives would be very much opposed to, they're supporting.
Yeah, basically, You would think that the line is that big businesses and corporations are right-wing, but you cannot find a single – I can't think of a single major corporation that is pushing right-wing values. They're all pushing left-wing values. Like, I was inspired to put that in because I live in Chicago, and I frequently ride the L, which is the local, you know, metro system, the equivalent of the subway. Plastered all over the subway stations are Allstate is running an ad campaign playing off the recent legalization of gay marriage across the country. It features two men holding hands and a rainbow flag. It's like, if corporations are the big regressive forces that the left claims they are, why are they catering to left-wing bugaboos? Why are they catering to gays? Why are they catering to transsexuals? Why does anyone who expresses a right-wing view like Pat Dickinson or so get fired from their jobs after a Twitter outrage? If corporations were right-wing, we would not be seeing that. But we are, in fact, seeing it. It's because corporations are de facto leftists. Even if they're not true believers, as in the case of, say, maybe Google or Facebook, they cater to left-wing values de facto to make money, which makes them just as bad, in my opinion.
And you point out even right-wing corporate figures that conservatives are very quick to defend. Conservatives get very defensive when the left attacks the Koch brothers, but the Koch brothers, for instance, are in favor of open borders.
Yeah, basically, even the so-called evil right-wing donors are far further to the left than the conservative base. Rupert Murdoch is another fine example. I believe Murdoch is also in favor of open borders, and he runs Fox News, the arch conservative, the arch enemy of the left, the evil news channel that is brainwashing Americans into being corporate drones, you know.
And I don't really think it's smart to identify as a right winger or conservative. I mean, there's a lot of issues from a stereotypically kind of leftist perspective about corporations that are right. I think there are a lot of cases where there do need to be more regulations against corporations, environmental regulations, regulations against corporations shipping jobs overseas. There are many cases where workers' rights regulations make sense. So I think there are many cases where traditionally the left has been correct about corporations.
Yeah, basically, letting corporations run roughshod has been an incredibly bad idea. Because all corporations, this goes back to a large part of it has to do with the fact that corporations are legally have the status of people. Yet corporations have no body to incarcerate and no soul to save, more or less. They have all the rights of a person, yet they're not expected to behave the way that people behave. I think another good point is I saw David Cerini made this point in a video. If corporations are considered people, but if they were actual people, they would be psychopaths because they care about nothing but enriching themselves. And they don't care who they happen to trample over. And in the case of all these corporations endorsing gay marriage or sexual degeneracy or homosexuality or transsexuality, we see this in action. Conservatives who support corporate deregulation are slitting their own throats.
So do you think it's important to sort of to drop anything to do with the right, maybe have a sort of a, like, radical centrist type movement that takes the right best positions and all the issues? I think it's idiotic, these people who talk about being more right wing or left wing.
Well, you have some conservative traditions in other countries that don't frown upon government intervention as long as it's in the service of the country as a whole. Like, for example, just up north in Canada, there's the concept of what is called a red Tory, a conservative who is willing to endorse greater government action as long as it serves the greater good. Like, for example, it was a conservative government in Canada that created the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, the state-owned broadcaster. And this was done basically to protect Canadians from American radio programs, American radio influence. It was a conservative government in the province of Ontario that created the power authority, Ontario Hydro, because again, otherwise Ontario would have had to have relied upon, would have had to have purchased its power from American distributors. So placing regulations on corporations and the protectionism is compatible with a conservative tradition. It's just, you know, you have to get outside the American concept of radical individualism and see how other people, conservatives in other countries, behave.
And your point number 7 about conservatives is you think military veterans automatically deserve respect. And this was about Donald Trump insulting John McCain.
Yeah, basically, conservatives always love more war, but to assuage their guilt over it, they basically try to fillet every war veteran as a hero, no matter what they actually did. I think this is an overreaction to the whole baby boomer mentality where returning soldiers from Vietnam were cascaded as baby killers. So instead, we basically go the opposite direction, and we respect everyone who served in the military, even if they were just a desk jockey. Or in the case of John McCain, a guy who was so incompetent that he graduated at the bottom of his class in the Naval Academy. He crashed a million planes when he was deployed in service in Vietnam and never got reassigned to his desk job. Most ordinary airmen would have been reassigned to a desk job after they crashed their second or third plane. But because McCain was the son of a famous admiral, he was basically allowed to do whatever he wanted. And then McCain got captured by the North Vietnamese, and it's not only because his tale of being arrested and held as a POW was some tale of heroism where he bravely held out against all the tortures. No, he admitted in his own words that he broke, he named names, he sold out his country, he participated in propaganda broadcasts designed to demoralize American soldiers, and his collaboration may have gone even further than that, but it was probably covered up in part by his, his father, who was an influential admiral. Claiming that McCain deserves respect because of his service is completely and utterly devaluing the concept of being a war hero.
And your point number 8 is you think the GOP needs to be moderate in order to win elections. And this kind of ties in with my point previously. I think, how do you define moderate, left, right, center? I think when they talk about being more moderate, they talk about being like more politically correct. But,
yeah, when they say moderate, they're talking about basically the GOP has to become in favor of more immigration, has to be in favor of gay marriage and transsexuality, has to be in favor of abortion. The only so-called conservative positions that the GOP is allowed to take are lower taxes and, yeah, that's it, basically lower taxes. And we've seen this approach fail in both 2008 and 2012, where the nominees, John McCain and Mitt Romney, were moderates who were supposedly going to appeal to the undecided center, and they both lost to Obama. So basically, and we've seen the exact opposite in 2010 and 2014. In 2010 we saw the Tea Party rise up and take back control, help the GOP take back control of the House because they were unabashedly conservative. They were loud and proud about being conservative and not about fighting the left. We saw the same thing with candidates like Joni Ernst and Bruce Rauner and who else was it? Anil and Scott Walker in 2014, who again were completely unashamed about being conservative and about fighting the left. So the idea that the GOP needs to be wishy-washy, politically correct, and moderate in order to win national elections is completely wrong. What it needs to do is energize its white conservative base by running candidates who are conservative. That's precisely why we see Trump rising in the polls. While he's far from the perfect conservative, he doesn't apologize, he states his opinions clearly, and that's why he's picking up so much support. Americans are screaming out for a candidate who says what they mean and means what they say.
point about Trump is he never apologizes. He's totally unapologetic.
Yeah, he makes statements and he may clarify them, but he never apologizes. He never grovels to the left. Groveling to the left is precisely why conservatives are conservatives. You never apologize to your enemy, and you never, ever take their advice, because they are always trying to undermine you. Trump has basically completely blown the conservative playbook out of the water, and that's why he's doing so well.
And you talk more about Trump, you spend more time attacking fellow conservatives and the left. And so basically Jeb Bush, Lindsey Graham, Rick Perry, they've all been attacking Donald Trump. Rick Perry is someone who is, like, pulling so minuscule in the polls. He's pulling at 1%, and he made some comments to Donald Trump. Oh, I'll show Donald Trump how tough I am by let's go do push-ups together or something. And he looked really pathetic.
Yeah, that's completely ridiculous. Basically, that's one of the main things about the conservatives. The left in this country has a policy of no enemies to the left. Like, no matter how bad the left gets, they almost never denounce their fellow travelers. That's why you have someone like Al Sharpton, a murderer, a legitimate racist who has helped foment racial strife in this country. He still is allowed to draw a paycheck and serves as Obama's chief advisor on racial issues. You've got a literal terrorist like Bill Ayers and Bernadette Dorn, who planted bombs and killed people in the 60s, allowed to live out their lives in cushy, tenured professorial positions. Yet if a conservative is too right-wing, is too quote-unquote racist, is too quote-unquote sexist, their own supporters will defenestrate them. We've seen this happen, like, for example, with John Derbyshire when he wrote in Packy Mag 3 years ago about racial issues of the talk, and he was fired by National Review because he was too racist, blah, blah, blah. We see this with all the candidates attacking Trump. This is one of the reasons why conservatives have continuously failed. They're always eating their own, whereas the left more or less functions as a unified front.
Well, there's that term that conservatives like to use called RINO, which means Republican in name only. But I think conservative is very effective. I think RINO is an idiotic term because being a Republican in itself is totally meaningless. Like, the majority of Republican politicians suck. So I think RINO is that term is very idiotic.
Well, RINO is sort of like a last, like, decade term. That's like a term for, like, that's like a term for the talk radio mainstream days. And it's been completely ineffective. And it also excludes the fact that, basically, like you said, being a Republican is in and of itself meaningless. Conservative cuts to the heart of the issue. These conservatives who claim to be standing up for us have completely failed to do so. And when push comes to shove, they actually side with the left and try to defenestrate their fellow conservatives when they're too right-wing.
You make, you always apologize to your enemies, and you talk about Jack Hunter, the Southern Avenger, and he was actually, for a while, his radio show was actually pretty good when he was pretty minor. Like, he had a small radio show in Charleston, South Carolina, and he wasn't bad back then, but then he got a job for Rand Paul, and he got attacked by some of the comments he made in the past. And he totally apologized, and now basically he's a nobody. He has absolutely nothing. If he stood by his original show, he could still be somewhat successful, but now he's absolutely nobody.
Yeah, basically, I remember Jack Hunter from the columns. If I recall correctly, he used to do a podcast for Tacky's magazine. He wasn't too bad back then. His problem was that he couldn't just say, It's one thing to legitimately change your opinions. It's another thing to just grovel. His basic thing was that he said, "Well, I wasn't really a racist. I just played around the radio." It's that sort of cowardice that is, again, one of the defining traits of conservatives. They say shit, and when they get called out on it, they just grovel. They completely fall apart. They don't stand behind what they say because they don't stand for anything. They always stand for, more or less, is keeping their cushy jobs and keeping. And avoiding the guillotines in the left-wing media. Speaking of tacky, Meg, Charles Johnson wrote a good article the other day on conservatives. Basically, he's a guy who has extensive experience working with these people, and basically he said they are more concerned about keeping their job than they are about actually fighting for the values that they purport to stand for. And that's why they're so buddy-buddy with the left. All they care about is money.
And the response by Eric Erickson, his response was that he said the people attacking conservatives, like they hate evangelicals, or they're just racist. And his response is to conservatives is that the other side, he calls them WN Nooks, like Unix. Did you read that?
No, I missed that. All I know about is like when he tried to claim that conservative was a slur against Christian voters, which is really absurd. I mean, I don't know what version of the Bible that Erickson has been reading. I mean, I'm not a Christian, but I'm familiar with Christian theology. I was raised as a Catholic. Point to the portion of the Bible where it says that you have to slavishly support Israel. Point to the portion of the Bible that says that you have to let your country be overrun by foreigners. Point to the section of the Bible where it says you have to endorse the degeneracy of gay rights. Claiming that being a Christian is synonymous with sucking up to Israel and sucking up to illegal aliens is completely counter to the idea of being a Christian.
So one last point I'll make is I know there's a generational divide. So if you look at all these the AM talk radio guys like Rush Limbaugh, most of their fan base is most older, like people over the age of 40, or I'd even say people over the age of 50. What political trends do you see among millennials?
Well, I see basically right. The audience for the mainline conservatives is old and getting older. I mean, my next door neighbor is religiously listens to right wing talk radio, and he's in his 50s. The younger generation I see is basically. I think the younger generation is more open to traditional values than most people would think, and is more open to immigration restriction and protectionism than most people would think. It's just that they feel so alienated by the right that they are not very enthusiastic about it. That's why you see Bernie Sanders picking up a lot of support among young people. That's why you see Trump picking up a lot of support among young people, because the millennials have just had it. And they've had it with the infinite toothless politicians, the baby boomer politicians like Obama, Bush, and Clinton, and are looking for something new. So I would say basically the younger generation is divided between more, I guess, a conservative libertarian contingent that is more, I guess, viscerally engaged and more combative than the mainstream conservatives, hence the term conservative, and more outright socialist, such as you see supporting Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, because if you look at it, mainstream conservatives are all about tax cuts for the wealthy, and millennials, they're the most economically fucked generation in recent history.
Yeah, basically, tax cuts, more or less, the kinds of tax cuts that Republicans are always talking about basically have no relevance to the younger generation. Income tax cuts won't impact any of us because most of us don't have any fucking income, or our income is so low it doesn't matter. Values like the things that mainstream conservatives talk about have no relevance to the average young person, which is why they're gravitating either towards Trump or towards Bernie Sanders.
And another point, I made this point. I was talking to Richard Spencer about millennials and these issues, and with mainstream conservatives like Karl Rove and Jeb Bush say that they'll say millennials are pro-immigration. I don't think that's necessarily true, but I do think a lot of people, I think the anti-immigration movement is stigmatized not because people want more immigration, but because it's synonymous with being like a right-winger, with being part of the religious right, the kind of stuff like that. I think it's the other way around, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is just the right stimulus hasn't really come into play to sort of stimulate young people to sort of be anti-immigration, which is, like, but we are seeing it right now with the way Trump has been acting and the way he's been pushing everyone towards the right. We saw this to a lesser extent, like, the whole reason, though, going by what happened in, like, the 60s, it would have been assumed that the country would have drifted further and further left. But that basically ended with Nixon, who put the brakes on the country's... In fact, like, for example, in 1972, that was when the amendments that allowed people from 18 upwards to vote in the national elections was passed into play. The Democrats that year were counting on the youth vote to deliver them the White House, but a majority of those other 21 voters were Nixon. When the negative effects of immigration become obvious to everyone, the population as a whole and young people in particular are going to take a hard shift towards the right.
Do you think on that issue, do you think it will be just a white issue, or do you think even a lot of non-whites will realize that it's bad for their own economic interests as well?
I think we'll see a lot. I think it will primarily be a white issue, but we will see a lot of non-whites tagging along for the ride, because resource availability is an issue that affects everyone. When people start seeing that when resources in this country start getting scarcer, when the country starts becoming poor, when the economy starts the artificial instruments propping up the economy collapse, we're all going to see that bringing in more people to basically take away all limited resources is going to hurt all of us. So we're going to see, I'd say, blacks and Latinos and other immigrant groups also take a hard shift toward the right. Again, we already saw this in the 2014 elections. Asians in 2012, I think, voted in favor of Democrats, I think like 74 to like 26%. But in the 2014 elections, they were 50% in favor of Republicans, 49% for Democrats. That shift has already occurred among Asians. It's going to occur among probably going to occur among blacks and Latinos as well.
So before I end the show, is there any more points you want to make about these topics?
I think we covered pretty much everything, Robert.
Okay, so Matt Forney, it's been a great show. Thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me on again, Robert.
That's all we have for today's show, so take care and we'll be back with you next time.